Well, welcome back again to the Rested Culture. It's nice to have you back. And you know, I can't believe, I just can't believe this is episode 66. My God, 66. It's hard to believe. I'm aging in front of you here, right through episode 66 of the Rested Culture podcast. Well, it's good to be back here again today. I hope the weather's nicer where you are. Right here in Iowa. It is currently 40 and rainy. There's nothing like rain when it's 40 degrees. Kind of soaks into you, which is why I've always got my cup of coffee handy here. But you might wonder why we're playing this little ukulele strum. And this ukulele strum is because today, right now, folks, Jimmy Buffett is giving a concert for Gillum as Florida governor as we speak. And as we talk right now, they're all dancing to stuff like this. And legendary singer-songwriter Jimmy Buffett is hosting a free concert in support of Democratic Senator Bill Nelson and Democratic gubernatorial nominee Andrew Gillum this weekend, right now. And it's happening at the amphitheater in downtown West Palm Beach. And they hope that you can join them in West Palm Beach for a Go TV concert to energize Democrats and parrot heads across the state. And Jimmy Buffett, well, I didn't realize this, folks. Jimmy Buffett is a resident of Palm Beach. You know, don't you wonder if he's right next to, like, Rush Limbaugh? I wonder how close he is to Rush Limbaugh. But he's there in Palm Beach, and he previously hosted a free concert days before the Florida Democratic primary after endorsing Gwen Graham, and she went on to finish second to Gillum in the race. So he's hosting this right now as we speak. So just a call out to vote. You know, you've heard that enough. We're not going to talk a lot about voting, and I hope you have already early. But if you haven't, please don't even let the weather get in your way. You got to get out. And you got to cast that ballot. You know, that's your ticket to complain about things. You got to get out there and vote. So, folks, I want to move into the agenda that we've got today. And we're going to talk a little bit about... do you know how much information your web browser is collecting about you right now? We're going to talk about that. And, you know, last week I announced if you've got anything that's griping, you know, just... any gripe that you've got, anything that's eating at you, like I talked about the iPhone and how it just lets unknown callers and no caller ID calls come through, much to my chagrin. God, I hate that iPhone. I mean, I love it, but I hate it. One of our listeners sent this report to me, and I'm going to talk about it today. And it goes on about how the VA is using dogs for useless fatal experimentation, and I want to talk about that. It's insanity. I had no idea that it's going on. We're going to chat about that a little bit. Then we're going to go into a pleasant Koch Brothers surprise, and we're going to talk about Sleazy Roger Stone. Sleazy Stone, as I like to call him. We're going to talk about him coming up, too. So, the first thing is, did you know how much information, I don't know if you know this or not, I didn't, but there's 10 types of data that your browser is collecting about you right now. And I've got a link to this in my show notes to some other things as well that we're going to talk about here today. So be sure to check those out. But the first thing is your browser collects data about your hardware and your software. In terms of software, your browser knows your operating system, your IP address, your browser type, and all of the browser plugins that you're using. And from a hardware standpoint, your browser collects information about your CPU, your central processing unit, your GPU, as well as your battery. I mean, this is kind of shocking how much information they can get just because you're going to a website with your browser. You know, it's that's the age we live in here, folks. You know, we've talked a lot about technology, and we just need to know what's going on with it, I think. If you're okay with it, that's fine, but... maybe this is in the fine print that they have you click on. I don't know. But the second point that we want to talk about is your browser also knows about your connection to the web. And that information includes your IP address and your browser speed. The third thing is, a website, we're talking about geolocation, the third point, geolocation. A website can accurately estimate your location even if you've not given it access to your GPS coordinates. Instead, it uses something called Google Geolocation. And even if you're accessing the web from a browser on a mobile device, it's going to be accurate to within 30 miles of your mobile device. Interesting stuff. The fourth thing, I don't know if you realize this, browsing history is also available. Just by going to a website, they can glean this type of information. And this is the most well-known data that your browser is collecting about you, and that is you and your browsing history. It's collecting that and it's storing that. Of course, you can go in and try to delete it, but even then, it might not be truly gone for good. And as an example, they're saying that in mid-2018, it emerged that Google maintains records about the way you used Chrome, their browser, in relation to the deleted data, even the specifics of how the data might have been wiped. And then the fifth thing is they're collecting mouse movements. Can you believe that? And it's your browser can reveal the mouse movements and clicks to websites. And I, again, on the link that I provide you in the show notes, there's a free tool. If you're kind of curious about what's going on here with your mouse, you can even go in there and look at that. They've got a tool to see it in action and how that looks to the people that are gleaning this information about your mouse movements, if you want to know. The sixth thing is your device's orientation, which struck me as a little bit odd. And these days, as we know, lots of smartphones come with built-in gyroscopes. They're used in fitness and similar movement-based type things. These little smartphones, they do a hell of a lot. And this data is collected in your browser. It knows whether your device has a gyroscope, a compass, which orientation it's currently in, and a few other technical details. And your browser can even predict your device, where your device is physically at the moment, such as, is it on a table, is it in a bag, or in your pocket? Why would they want to know that if the phone is in my pocket? I mean, is there any reason why the browser is passing this information along? I'm just curious. I mean, I don't get it. It seems like a lot of work that somebody has done to provide lots of information that you wouldn't otherwise think would be needed, you know, through a browser. But anyway, point number seven here, social media logins. Your browser collects information about which social networks that you're logged into while you're browsing the web. It can relay that information too. The app can correlate that information with other data points so advertisers know where and how to target you for the maximum impact. And point number eight, fonts and language. Your browser knows which fonts are installed on your machine and which language you're using on your operating system. Like it needs to know. And point number nine here, folks, is that whenever you upload an image using your browser, it will scan the file's metadata to learn more about you. And the metadata can include information such as location, image resolution, technical specs of the file, even the camera model that you used to take a photograph. All that flows with it. And the last point is number 10. In addition to the points that we've discussed above, your browser also collects massive amounts of technical data about the way that you're accessing the web. And this data includes your user agent, your touchscreen support, whether the Do Not Track header is enabled, your screen size, and more. There's a lot of stuff going on when you're browsing, folks. And, I mean, I don't really care because I'm reading news all the time, for God's sakes. I mean, you know this. I mean, it doesn't really matter to me, but it's kind of creepy that it knows nonetheless. And that's the point that kind of gets you, isn't it? It just, does this automatically. And why they've built all this in there is a little bit of a mystery. But obviously, they're maybe looking to use this information to sell it. You know how that is. Everybody's got thinking of dollar signs. But with so much of your data that's potentially at risk, it's wise to do an audit every now and again, the article says. And this will let you stay on top of what's leaking and how to take remedies to fix it. And they're pointing to two different programs that you can use to do this. There's one called WebK, W-E-B-K-A-Y, and the other one is called Panopticlick, which is P-A-N-O-P-T-I-C-L-I-C-K. And there's links in the article. You can click on those and check it out a little bit further if you'd like. Just interesting stuff. But, my God, do they need to know this anyway? Really? I mean, do they need it? Oh, it just doesn't make any sense to me sometimes. But that's the way it is. But, folks, I want you to stay right there. We've got this article coming up that one of our listeners sent to me, and I want you to know about this. So hang on. I'm going to take a sip of coffee, and I'm going to be right back. Well, folks, I don't know if you're a dog fan, but I love the doggies. You know, the little ones, the big ones. I kind of like the little ones. I pick up their poop and clean up their pee just like everybody else does. But hell, I love the little Wiccans. And when I got this story, you know, it just kind of threw me for a loop. This isn't the kind of thing that you would expect that would actually be going on right now and with federal money. And this article, there's a link to it in my show notes, and we've got a call to action at the end of this. And I've donated some money to this nonprofit organization called White Coat Project Waste.org. And I'd encourage you, after reading this for yourself, if you love dogs and you think that experimentation on dogs should not be something that we do, I'd encourage you to help them out with what they're doing here, folks. But again, this is coming to us from the USA Today, and this came out November 1st, and the Department of Veterans Affairs is pushing forward with invasive and ultimately fatal experiments on dogs as part of the VA's medical research program, according to documents that were obtained by USA Today. The controversial procedures previously sparked outrage and opposition from some veterans advocates and prompted strict restrictions from Congress. The VA says the studies could produce discoveries that may help veterans suffering from spinal cord or breathing problems. But folks, I have to tell you, they haven't had any advances in decades of doing testing on these dogs. That's what they're telling you, is that these studies could produce, but the reality is they have not produced for decades. And the testing on dogs continues. And it's happening underneath our noses. In Milwaukee, the experiments call for researchers to remove sections of dogs' brains to test neurons that control breathing before the animals are killed by lethal injection. The research records are showing this. In Cleveland, tests involve using electrodes on dogs' spinal cords that they put on to measure cough reflexes before and after severing the spinal cords. And folks, in Richmond, Virginia, experiments include implanting pacemakers in dogs, then inducing abnormal heart rhythms, and running the animals on treadmills to test cardiac function before euthanizing them by injection or by draining their blood. And I've got to tell you, this is stuff that's got to end. This has got to end. And it's been going on for decades, and like I've said, they've had no material advance. They've made no advances from this testing in decades. And this is what's going on. And, you know, if you've got pets, if you've got dogs, even if you don't, this is not something that should be going on, especially since they're not making any advances, you know, from this testing. But VA spokesman Kurt Cashower said former Secretary David Shulkin approved the continuation of the experiments on March 28th, the same day he was fired by Donald Trump. But there's a caveat here. But Shulkin told USA Today on Monday, just on Monday of last week, that he wasn't asked, nor did I request a review for an approval of the ongoing dog experiments. He said he had delegated that responsibility to the agency's research specialists. And it's important that whether he or his successor signed off on these orders, it's important because a law that Trump signed on March 23rd requires that dog experiments be directly approved by the VA's secretary to receive agency funding. It doesn't specify written permission. Cashour said that Shulkin gave the go-ahead orally in an early afternoon meeting on March 28th with five other VA top VA executives. And again, he's denying that, folks. He's denying it. So it sounds like they kind of got this one in under the radar. Sneaky, corrupt. We knew it. We know this. This is what we're dealing with in my interpretation with the Trump administration. This guy was heading out, so they decided to go ahead and sneak this in. It's got to end. And the records that were reviewed by USA Today show that there are 9 active experiments at 4 VA facilities. And more are likely in the future. They're going to be doing more. And an investigation uncovering surgery failures and deaths in VA experiments on dogs has led to more scrutiny from the agency chiefs and Congress, but it's not stopping tests involving pain for dogs. It's not stopping that. And it, like I said, folks, we've got to help try to end this process of experimentation. And what they're saying here, the VA is coming back and saying that they contend that the research could lead to discoveries that may help veterans with heart conditions or breathing problems, which can accompany paralysis. Cashour said researchers use dogs only when no other species would provide meaningful results, and the work is ethically sound. The VA says more than 99% of agency studies involve rats or mice. When asked to cite the most recent breakthroughs credited from the VA dog research, Cashour pointed to the invention of an implantable cardiac pacemaker and procedures that led to the first successful liver transplant. Folks, those experiments date to the 1960s, before I was even born, according to the VA's website. Bunch of BS. They need to stop it. No more experiments on dogs, for God's sakes. And lawmakers who have been pushing to end invasive dog experiments at the VA say they are disappointed with the agency's new leadership, that they're moving forward with the testing, and they're continuing it. And why there's no, I'm quoting, why there's no commitment to it, I don't know, because it doesn't yield any results, said Representative Dinah Titus, a Democrat from Nevada. And she's a lead co-sponsor of a bill with Representative David Bratt, who's a Republican from Virginia. And they're introducing this legislation that would stop the experiments. And that's Representative Dinah Titus, and Dave Bratt. One's a Democrat, one's a Republican. Introducing legislation that would stop the experiments. They're saying that it's not economically sound. They could be looking at new techniques, and morally, people just don't support testing on puppies. Although they were glad Trump signed the legislation in March requiring the VA secretary approval to fund the experiments, Titus Bratt and Representative Brian Mast, another Republican from Florida, said they will continue pushing to stop them altogether. We haven't executed what we wanted as intent, which was to bring this to an end in its entirety, said Brian Mast, a veteran who lost both legs in Afghanistan, is now a member of the House VA Committee. And they talk about botched surgeries here, folks. The issue started gaining traction with this whole move to end these experiments, It started gaining traction with lawmakers in spring of 2017 when an advocacy group, which is called the White Coat Waste Project, released documents showing that VA researchers in Richmond had botched surgeries on dogs. And I just can't imagine. I don't want to see the pictures. The fact that they're simply saying that these surgeries were botched, I just can't imagine what sort of Frankenstein work that these VA researchers in Richmond, Virginia, are doing. I mean, how can you go to work every day and do this to dogs? I mean, we're paying for this, folks. I just don't believe it. But like I said, the White Coat Waste Project, it's a group that's opposed to taxpayer funding of VA medical experiments on dogs. They've said that they're going to try to end this, and they need your help to do it. And, you know, due to some of the representatives and the advocacy of this group, the White Coat Waste Project, within months of this, the botched surgeries that were happening in Richmond, Virginia, the House unanimously passed legislation to defund the experiments, but the measure stalled in the Senate after VA officials launched a public campaign to stop it. And that campaign that they launched included getting support from veterans groups such as the American Legion and Paralyzed Veterans of America. That's interesting that they're supporting it. I don't think they're supporting what really is happening in this. I don't think the American Legion is supporting the botched surgeries and the level of pain that these poor things are going through. And before he was fired, Shulkin, who was the old administrator of the VA, said his views on the subject had changed. At one point, he did support it, but he said his views had changed, and he put a moratorium on new experiments, beginning without his permission. So he tried to put a moratorium on this after I think he found out what was going on, no doubt. And back in March, he ordered that all ongoing studies be reviewed by VA research executives. And Cashour, who is the VA spokesman, said that that review concluded that dogs are the only viable models for 9 experiments. In a letter to lawmakers obtained by the newspaper USA Today, the VA said that they include tests on spinal cords in Cleveland. They're testing brains in Milwaukee. They're testing 5 heart experiments in Richmond, as well as heart experiments at another cardiac, canine cardiac facility that they're doing these testings in St. Louis. So they're testing the heart experiments in both Richmond, Virginia, and St. Louis. So this is happening all over the place. And, you know, it's like I said, folks, it's been decades since this research on dogs has led to any advances. And I'd really encourage you to go to whitecoatwaste.org, like I did, and donate something, anything that you can, to help end this suffering. Anything you can will help these people in what they're doing. And I'd encourage you to go to that website. Again, the links are in my show notes. Check it out and see if you can't do something to help end this madness today. And stay right there, folks. We've got a little bit of a switch in gears. We're going to talk about a pleasant Koch Brothers surprise. And it's coming from Breitbart. My God, of all places, it's coming from Breitbart. We've got a Koch Brothers surprise. Stay right there. Well, you know that this is coming again. I can't believe it. It's coming from Breitbart, and they're just as mad as a bunch of hornets over this information. And it leads off like this. The pro-mass immigration GOP megadonor billionaire Koch brothers are opposing President Trump's plan to executively end birthright citizenship, which rewards the U.S.-born children of illegal aliens. As we know, on Tuesday, President Trump announced that he is readying an executive order to end birthright citizenship in the U.S. And this unilateral move would carry the country into the future on the issue, putting the nation more in line with similar Western countries, according to the article. Currently, the U.S. and Canada are the only two countries, developed nations we'll call them, in the world that offer unrestricted birthright citizenship. And the children of illegal aliens are commonly known as anchor babies, as they, the Breitbart article goes on to say, as they anchor their illegal alien and non-citizen parents. I just don't like that term, anchor babies, but they're saying that there are 4.5 million anchor babies in the country and a population that exceeds the total number of annual American births. And just a sidebar here, you know what the Republicans, I think, are concerned about here is that they don't think that, well, for one, you know, they're nationalists, let's just face it. I mean, it's a racist basis for all of this, you know, in immigration, we know it. And they're really afraid of what's going to happen to their voting base. I mean, that's the motivation behind all of this, is these people coming in, they don't perceive them to be Republicans, which I think is, you know, it's a bunch of BS. People come in, they are conservative. They vote conservative for different reasons. They vote the Democratic Party for different reasons. I don't think it has to do with where you came from, but I think that's the root of a lot of this, folks, is that the Republican Party today is afraid of immigration because it means that they'll have less control. And the article goes on to say here that after Trump suggested his plan to end birthright citizenship, the Koch brothers funded Libre Initiative Organization released a statement calling the anchor baby policy part of the country's principles. And they go on to quote him here to say that the president has stated his intention to use executive action to try to end birthright citizenship in this country, a proposal he first endorsed as a candidate in 2015. And that was coming from Libre Initiative President Daniel Garza, that he said in a statement. And to go on and quote him again, he says, "Then and now, we declare our opposition to this idea that goes against our principles. Our immigration laws should be updated based on the most thoughtful ideas," Garza said. "We remain steady and ready to work with anyone who is willing to work seriously toward this important goal." And the statement here is from the Koch brothers organizational network. It is just the latest attempt for the economic libertarian billionaires to oppose Trump's America First agenda, according to Breitbart. It's just the latest attempt to oppose Trump's America First agenda. So you can see that Breitbart has put the Koch brothers in their gun sights, and man, yeah, you should, they're mad as hornets over there. You should read some of the responses. Good Lord, I'm not even going to go there. Let's just suffice it to say that they're mad. But it's reasonable. I mean, you know, these people on, I don't know, the extremist conservatives, they think nothing of throwing another Republican under the bus. They think nothing about doing that. And there were these commercials, you know, for example, while I was getting this article off of Breitbart, I was looking and there were these, you know, these commercials that Trump was running about how the Democrat, you know, immigration policy and presidents had allowed a cop killer to come immigrate into this state and, you know, kill police. And he's running that television ad right now. But the reality of it is, between 2001 and 2008, this, what was his name, Bucamonte, you know, this cop killer that immigrated in, the Bush organization presidency failed to catch him and throw him out from 2001 to 2008. And they're trying to pin that on Democrats. But when I threw the example out there that between 2001 and 2008, this immigrant from Mexico who's killing cops, was allowed to remain here in the United States. They said, oh, you know, it doesn't mean anything that that was a Republican because he's a globalist. Of course, yeah, Bush is a globalist. It doesn't matter that that killer was allowed to live here for those 7 years under a Republican administration because he's a globalist. So they'll throw each other under the bus. I mean, there's no, they have no compunction about doing that. But now we're going to talk about Sleazy Stone, Roger Stone. If you've listened to my podcast, you know that I'm no fan of Roger Stone. And the interesting thing here, I've got an article here from thehill.com, and it's in my show notes, and you're welcome to click on that for more details. But I'm going to go into some of the interesting stuff that's going on. And I want you to know that next week is going to be interesting. We've got Mueller really focusing on Sleazy Stone. And he's interviewed three people so far. Because I believe that obviously Mueller is hammering home the theme that Sleazy Stone had some sort of a hand, some sort of knowledge in the WikiLeaks dump. And this could be an important missing link that we've got with this whole sort of collusion thing going on. Sleazy Stone, who would have thought? But here's the article from The Hill. And as we mentioned, the article goes on to say that Robert Mueller continues to zero in on Roger Stone as speculation builds that the special counsel could take a major overt step in his Russia investigation following the midterm elections that are coming up, as we know, next this week. But they believe that a step could be forthcoming from the Mueller investigation right after that, the week after the elections. So Sleazy Stone, the article goes on to say, who is a longtime advisor to President Trump, who briefly worked on his campaign, is viewed as central to the question of what, if anything, members of the Trump campaign knew in advance about Democratic emails hacked by Russian operatives and then released by WikiLeaks. The special counsel's team has been interviewing and subpoenaing several Stone associates and former Trump campaign officials in an apparent effort to drill down on Stone's links to WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange and any knowledge that he had had or might have about the hacked emails. Of course, Sleazy Stone vehemently denies having inside information about the content or source of the emails, noting on an interview that just happened on Friday that he was simply tipped off by a source that WikiLeaks had bombshell information that would roil the presidential race in October of 2016. And emails that were released Thursday by the New York Times showed that Stone was in communication with at least one senior campaign official, namely Stephen Bannon, about the forthcoming disclosures, anticipating that, and I quote him, a load every week going forward. Remember that when he said that? When asked about Assange's plans. Mueller's team interviewed Stephen Bannon last week, a source that's familiar with the interaction confirmed to thehill.com. And publicly, Stone appeared to forecast the release of material that would damage Hillary Clinton's campaign in the weeks and days leading up to the leaks of hacked messages from John Podesta's personal email account. Remember all this when it was coming out? Stone even went as far as to say, Wednesday, Hillary Clinton is done. Hashtag WikiLeaks. Sleazy Stone wrote on his Twitter account, remember that? Which has since been suspended. Back on October 2nd of 2016. WikiLeaks released the hacked emails 5 days later, a Friday, shortly after the release of the Access Hollywood tape in which Trump is heard bragging to Billy Bush about groping and kissing women without their content. Still, none of the communications, private nor public, that have emerged in the press show him discussing the content of the source of the documents before their release, a detail that Roger Stone highlighted in arguing he did nothing wrong. And he did this in an op-ed penned piece that he wrote for the conservative news site The Daily Caller. Stone on Thursday denied urging WikiLeaks to release the Podesta emails following the Access Hollywood revelations. He also said that he predicted the WikiLeaks release is based on publicly were based on publicly available information, including a July 2016 CNN interview with Assange, as well as information communicated to him by radio host and political activist satirist Randy Credico. So, an interesting thing here to this whole thing is that Roger Stone had communications with Randy Credico, and Randy says that Roger wrote me in an email and said that he had met with Julian Assange. And when he initially told me that he did, Roger said to me that they were going to release information on the Clinton Foundation. Interesting here, folks. So, one question that you might have in all of this is, did Roger Stone travel to the UK? I mean, this is something, I haven't seen the answer to that. I mean, that's something that we could prove in this link to the information released by WikiLeaks. I mean, it sounds like Roger Stone was critical in that process. You know, it just gave you the impression that they had nothing to fear. You know, they were going to release this information. Stone had this important role working with WikiLeaks. It's like they had no compunction about it, which just, you know, really, really bothered me, as you could tell back in those days when this was going on. And it bothered a lot of you, too, as it should. Well, you know, Robert Mueller is on this sleazy Stone trail big time here, folks. Big time. And kind of listen to this here just a second. The article goes on to say that the path of Mueller's inquiry into Stone is unclear, largely because his investigation has pressed forward behind closed doors, though a handful of interviews and subpoenas established his interest in the longtime Trump ally. Kristen Davis, better known as the Manhattan Madam, is one longtime Stone associate who testified before the grand jury in August. Jerome Corsi, a far-right conspiracy theorist with links to Stone, has reportedly been subpoenaed to testify as well. Former Stone aide Andrew Miller is currently battling a grand jury subpoena and is due back in federal appeals court next Thursday. He's currently battling a subpoena. Andrew Miller. Makes you wonder what he knows. So that's three people that Mueller is focused on with respect to sleazy Stone. Three people. And one of them is currently fighting a grand jury subpoena. So wait for that next week as well, coming up on Thursday. What is going to happen with Andrew Miller? We'll find out next Thursday. It sounds like, I mean, to me, in my way of thinking, the only people that would fight a grand jury subpoena, folks, are the ones that really have something to fear. Why would you fight? Why wouldn't you go and tell them what you know if it just meant going in and discussing and then going about your day? Why would you fight it like this unless you really had information or something that completes the link between Roger Stone and Julian Assange in WikiLeaks? In the article here, it goes on to say that legal experts following the probe suspect Mueller is looking for evidence that the Trump campaign somehow played a role in the release of the hacked emails. Trump, as we know, has vehemently denied that the campaign colluded with Moscow, criticizing Mueller's investigation as a witch hunt. Haven't heard that too much, though, recently, have we? Seems to be fading. Seems like it is a, you know, it's a true investigation that's coming up with a lot of wrongdoing. It's not a witch hunt. So, Sleazy Stone here has said that, in closing, Roger Stone is saying that he is prepared to be indicted by Mueller, should that be the case. But last Friday, he predicted nothing would happen if the special counsel makes decisions based on facts or evidence. And he says here that this is a classic. If their decision is made on the basis of facts or evidence, then nothing will happen, Roger Stone said. There's no evidence and no person that could honestly testify that I received anything, including allegedly hacked emails from the Russians, Guccifer 2.0, Julian Assange, WikiLeaks, Jerry Corsi, or anyone else. and I passed it on to Donald Trump, the campaign, or anyone else. Well, Roger, here's the deal. We think that maybe you didn't physically get the information, but you played a role. That's my hunch. And folks, we're going to find out more about this as the Mueller investigation continues, and we're going to get to the truth. We're going to get to the truth. And it's important, like I said, a thousand times, this is the last time I'm going to say it, it's important that you vote, because I have a feeling that Donald Trump, and you know this, will not want to make the Robert Mueller report public. He's going to try to quash it. He's going to try to keep it quiet. And he can do that with a Republican-led House. He can do that with a Republican-led Senate. We need to vote. And I am pushing for balance. I think that we need more balance in this election. The Democrats will not let that Mueller report go without its day in the sunshine. The Democrats won't allow it. So don't forget to vote. So folks, I want to thank you for joining me again this time for episode 66. And gosh, wouldn't it be more fun to be at that Jimmy Buffett concert down there in Florida? I think it'd be a lot more fun. Hell, like I said, it's 40 degrees and raining. Margaritaville sounds like a lot more fun. But here we are. And I think that you're here. I thank you for being here with me as well. And folks, I want to say, till then, I want you to have a good week. Enjoy the election. Let's keep our fingers crossed, and we'll talk to you then. Thanks again. This is Frank Ebersold with The Rusted Culture signing off. And again, if you've got anything that's getting your goat, something that's bothering you, an article, a product, anything, or just want to shoot the bull, send me an email at rustedcultureradar@gmail.com. We'll look forward to getting it. Thanks again, and take care.